Thank you, Alessia, for this invitation to give this seminar. So the subject of my talk is some work that I've been doing during my PhD. And the main reference will be a paper that came out last year that I worked on with my PhD supervisor, Michele Maggiore, and his collaborators in Geneva. And basically this paper is summarizes a bit a line of research that has been conducted in Geneva regarding effective non-local models in cosmology. And today I want to explain a bit what are the theoretical foundations of this kind of models, and if we have some time also with the phenomenology of this kind of models. So to give a bit the outline of my talk, so most of the attention will be on the motivations and on the theoretical framework of this kind of models. And I will discuss some examples of infrared quantum effects in gravity. I will also summarize a bit the notions of quantum field theory that we need to explore that. And then I will discuss how we can build some diffeomorphism invariant mass terms for the conformal mode of the metric. And I will discuss a bit the model that comes out from this when you covariantize, when you consider a covariant theory of this kind. And then, as I said, if we have time, we can discuss a bit the cosmology of these models at the level of a background and also scalar and tensor perturbations. So just to give a bit of, an introduction, so from the point of view of a cosmologist, studying modified gravity is something very interesting because, as we know, the standard cosmological model, lambda CDM, is in good agreement with data, but is not fully satisfactory from a theoretical point of view. So whenever there is the possibility to test some alternatives and explore them, it's good for cosmologists. And the approach that I'm discussing here is to is based on these questions that I outlined here in blue. So can quantum effects in gravity have cosmological consequences? And unfortunately, there is not a precise answer to this because this will need a first principle understanding of infrared quantum effects. So the point of view that we've taken when doing this kind of work is to study some phenomenological forms of models. So study some non-local terms appearing in the quantum effective actions and see if they can give a viable cosmology. So to give the theoretical framework for this, let me just remind about the quantum effective action. So when we want to include quantum fluctuations, the quantity that is relevant is not the classical action, which is a functional of the fields, but is the quantum effective action. And the quantum effective action is built with this standard procedure. So here I show, for example, for a scalar field in flat spacetime, just as a way to start with. And so you consider the generating functional of connected Green's functions, this W of J here, in the presence of an external source. And then you can you basically by taking derivatives of this generating functional with respect to the external current, you can get vacuum expectation values of the field, which are this phi here, phi of j. And then by taking a Legendre transform of this W, which is the, as I said, the generating functional of connected Green functions, you obtain the what is called the quantum effective action. And when you consider variations of the quantum effective action with respect to this phi, you obtain basically the equations of motion for the vacuum expectation values. And here I wrote the fundamental property of this quantum effective action. So it's obtained by integrating over quantum fluctuations here. So in principle, one could implement, for example, perturbative techniques to compute this depending on the starting action. So here at the beginning on the right-hand side, you could just trade gamma for the classical action and then iterate this procedure to have better and better approximations. But this is just from a theoretical point of view. So in practice, evaluating quantum effective actions is very difficult. And I also want to underline that this quantum effective action I'm talking about is not the Wilson effective action. So we are not integrating massive fields to study a low energy behavior of a theory, but we are considering the full quantum fluctuations. So in principle, we know that the quantum effective action has the same regime of validity as the starting classical action. So when you want to implement this for gravity, that is the focus of this talk, then you have to integrate both over matter fluctuations, which is done in this stage here. So let's suppose you have a Einstein-Hilbert action and the matter action. We start by integrating over quantum fluctuations of matter. And for simplicity, we just take vacuum expectation values of matter to be zero, because in the end, we are interested in the dynamics of the metric, so in the gravitational dynamics of the graviton, let's say. And after you do this, in principle, you should also integrate over quantum fluctuations of the metric. And to do this, you have to include gauge fixing terms and the Fedot-Popov determinant. So this is just to give a bit of a reminder of something well known. And I also want to point out something that will be useful to give the correct interpretation of these models that I will present. So an important point is that the physical interpretation of our results is determined by the precise definition of this Pathe integral sphere. So when we write formally a Pathe integral, in principle, we should also give a prescription for the boundary conditions that we want to use. And depending on the boundary conditions, then these vacuum expectation values that you will get in the end will have a different interpretation. So if you use a Feynman Pathe integral, this will be in-out matrix elements. While if you use a Schwinger-Keldysh Pathe integral, you will get in matrix elements. And it's important to remind that only in this case you obtain equations of motion that use the retarded propagator. So this means that if you want to, for example, give an interpretation for a quantity like this as a semi-classical metric, then you have to use the right prescription for doing this Pathe integral, which is the Schwinger-Keldysh one. On the contrary, if you use the Feynman prescription, we know that the Feynman propagator will appear, and the Feynman propagator is not the retarded one, so it will give you some equations of motion that are not causal, and therefore we cannot interpret this as a semi-classical metric, as the dynamics of a semi-classical metric. So when I will write in the end these non-local models, I will have some action which has to be intended as a quantum effective action, and the equations of motion derived from this will use the retarded propagator in order to make sense when computing expectation values of fields in cosmology. So in cosmology, you compute expectation values of a fields, or more in general, you can compute correlators at a given time over a certain state. I see there is someone who raised this hand. Hey, Laurent.
I have a question about What vacua are you talking about, since you're not in flat space? There's no unique choice of vacua, so
Yeah,
how do you
here I'm
deal
not
with that
specifying
in
it.
detail?
I mean,
So what do you
here
mean
is.
by boundary? So what boundary condition defines this in vacua you're talking about?
Yeah, here I'm not doing any computation explicitly. So this was just to show what is the general prescription. Then depending on the vacuum that you describe, you can obtain something different. But I mean, I'm not going really to do these computations, so it's not relevant for the result that I will present. I mean, at this point here, it fully makes sense because here we are in flat space time, right? So this vacuum here is the vacuum of the Fock space. But yeah, you're correct when saying that when including curved space-time metric, the choice of the vacuum is not unique. I agree on that. Yeah.
So that vacuum is going to break covariance, for instance.
Why do you want to break covariance?
No, I'm just saying if you the vacuum breaks covariance.
No, this is not the situation I'm considering in the following.
Okay, but because the diffeomorphism acting could change completely the vacua you're talking about. So are you?
Sorry, diffeomorphism.
Are you
could
considering
change.
That? Or?
No, but I mean, here
is
it's
the
just.
Are you assuming that the vacua is invariant under action of diffeomorphism? Or?
Yeah, here I'm assuming that, but I mean, in the end, I will not really.
We know it's not
possible. Like this.
We know it's not possible. In
is that actually true? I mean, can this always be true that the vacuum is invariant?
No, it cannot be true.
Yeah, because like there is already breaking of Lorentz invariance. With things on Minkowski.
Yeah, for example, what do you mean?
Yeah, there's the usual problem of breaking of the Lorentz invariants for just standard quantum field theory on Minkowski space time. This might have nothing to do with what you're talking about, but I would be curious to see so how do you ensure that you have states that are invariant under all diffeomorphisms? It seems to be very strong.
Yeah, that's true.
The risk is that, you know, if you're talking about such invariant states and there are no such invariant states, then you know what happens. You end up describing not much.
But this was just to give a general introduction to the subject. It's not really what we are doing in our work.
Oh, okay, yeah.
We're doing something
okay.
Much simpler.
Sure, then, yeah, sorry. I guess you should go ahead.
Okay.
Thanks, email. that's helpful, actually. Okay, thank you.
An interesting property, generally speaking, of quantum effective actions is that they can contain non-localities when your theory contains massless particles. So here I'm just giving a simple example from QED. So when you consider QED and you consider quantum fluctuations of the electron, in a regime, in the energy regime where the electron is light, Then when you describe the dynamics of the photon, so how the dynamics of the photon is affected by these quantum fluctuations of the electron, this is the kind of structure you obtain. So you obtain that there is a form factor here which runs like logarithmically with the energy. So in this sense, the non-locality just translates the fact, the well-known fact that the coupling constant is running in momentum space. So in this case, the non-locality is just the translation of this fact to coordinate space. And here I wrote the what is the definition of this log in terms of inverse of box operator to make it clear that this is a non-local operator. So in the case of gravity, you certainly have massless particles because the graviton itself in GR is massless. So we could expect to have non-local terms in the quantum effective action. And since these non-local terms, for example, could be inverse of box, then this could be relevant in the infrared, so at low energies. So this is just the just a simple way to introduce these non-local operators. And to discuss just a well-known example more in detail, we could consider the Polyakov action. So this is the action in for gravity in two dimensions, which is induced by the trace anomaly. So basically, by integrating the trace anomaly, which is proportional to the Ricci scalar, and this is an exact result. You can compute it at one loop, but the result is exact. So only one loop contributions given on zero result here. And in two dimensions, you can integrate this to figure out the corresponding quantum effective action. This is possible because in two dimensions, you just have 1 degree of freedom in your metric that you can take to be the conformal mode here. So I'm decomposing the metric as this factor e to the 2 sigma, where sigma is the conformal mode times a reference metric that I can always take to be the Minkowski metric locally, because we are in two dimensions. So there is just 1 degree of freedom. And just 1 degree of freedom in the metric after gauge transformation. When you integrate this conformal anomaly to get the quantum effective action, you could also write it in a covariant way by introducing non-local operators. So again, non-local operators play a role here when writing it in a covariant form, like I wrote here. And then in principle, you should also integrate over quantum fluctuations of the metric. So this was just due to quantum fluctuations of the matter fields. So if there are n of them, this contribution will be proportional to n. And then when you also integrate over quantum fluctuations of the metric, and you properly include the contribution from the Fadev-Popov ghost, then you get a correction like this. An important point. The point that I want to discuss here a bit, that will be also useful when discussing the model that we have been studying for this project, is that when you look at an action like this, if you look here at the kinetic term, it could seem that depending on this number n, you have a ghost like degree of freedom or not. But the point is that we know that we cannot count degrees of freedom from the quantum effective action. So our starting theory has no ghost because it's just Hess and Hilbert gravity in two dimensions. So of course there is something wrong in this conclusion. And the point is that exactly this, that quantum effective action is not the right object to look at to count the degrees of freedom. And more explicitly, when you consider this at the quantum level, then in principle, we know that we have to impose some conditions on the states for this to be physical. So just like in the simple case of QED, where you have a U1 gauge group, in that case you will have some conditions that eliminates states associated to the A0 component of the potential of the A mu, also of the spin one field. And here you will have some other conditions. So you will have some conditions for the state to have zero VRST charge. And if one imposes these conditions here, it has been shown that this exactly eliminates the unphysical degrees of freedom associated to the ghost and to the sigma. So because we know that in two dimensions, there is no propagating degree of freedom for gravity. So we reach the same conclusion also from the point of view of at the quantum level. So this was some to show some explicit examples where we have some kind of understanding of this quantum effective action for gravity. And now I will enter in a more, let's say, speculative regime. First I will give you some like a summary of some indications of strong quantum gravity effects in the infrared. And so here are summarized three aspects of this. So as the first one, there are strong infrared divergences in the graviton propagator in the sitter space. So the sitter space is commonly used in this kind of explorations because you have a large symmetry that you can exploit to figure out what happens. And so in this paper by Antoni Adis and Mottola, they found strong divergences in the propagator, and the mode the divergence that diverges stronger more strongly is the conformal mode. A typical effect that you have in the infrared when considering quantum quantum corrections is a dynamical mass generation process. So this has been shown, for example, for a field in a given background. So if you consider a massless field, which is a quartic self-interaction, then in the sitter background, it will develop dynamically some mass, which has this kind of structure. So this has been shown by various people, but the first ones, I think, were Sarobinsky and Yokoyama in the context of stochastic inflation. And I also want to mention some more recent results that are encouraging for this kind of line of research. So there is this paper by Knorr and Saweresi. I think the first author is also in the audience. So in this paper, they use lattice gravity. So more precisely, they use causal dynamical triangulation. And they found some results that suggest generation of the mass from the conformal mode in the infrared. So as far as I understood, they have not studied the continuum limit yet, but in any case, this is something encouraging for this kind of research. And also from other kind of non-perturbative techniques, like functional renormalization group equations, there are indications like this. There are some old indications. This is a paper of 2004, where you have some, so when you study these renormalization group trajectories, there are some of them that have some singularity when you evolve them towards low energies, and similar effects in the infrared has been found also more recently by Vetterich and Morris. So I mean, it seems from this kind of observations in this slide, seems that it could be worth exploring the possibility that quantum effects generate some kind of mass for the conformal mode. And this is the assumption that we are doing in this model. So we want to explore this possibility, and we want to write some model that implement this idea. So we want to write some model that covariant models that have that give a mass to the conformal mode of the metric, and we want to study if they can really be viable for cosmology. And to anticipate the result of this discussion, I can tell you that we have one model of this kind that seems to work for cosmology, but of course we don't have a fundamental derivation of the model. So to implement this idea of the mass for the conformal mode, how can we do it? So how can we build the mass for the conformal mode without breaking the diffeomorphism invariance? First let me show a more simple example. So instead of considering the group of the diffeomorphisms, let's just consider electrodynamics, so the U1 gauge group, much more simple. And we want to show that we can write, we can introduce a mass for the photon in a way which preserves gauge invariance if we allow for non-localities in our action. And this means that non-localities can really give you masses, but preserving gauge invariance. So this is a really simple example. So we are comparing like the standard Broca theory for a massive photon, and this kind of action here, where you have a non-local term. And we want to show that this formulation, which is non-local, is equivalent to this kind of formulation, which is local. And the point is that, when you do things in the local theory, you can derive the equations of motions. You don't have any gauge invariance here because the mass is breaking gauge invariance. So, and you obtain a condition like this, which seems like a Lorentz gauge condition, but it's just a dynamical consequence of the equations of motion. And then with the exploiting this, you can simplify a bit your equation of motion. Here, what you can do is, first of all, you compute the equations of motion from here. Then, since you have a gauge freedom, because here this action is gauge invariant, you can use the Lorentz gauge. And then with the Lorentz gauge, you find exactly the same equations as before. So in different ways, you reach the same equations of motion. And this means that the two formulations of the theories are equivalent. Of course, I would like to mention that this is not a genuine non-locality, because you could get rid of this by a gauge choice, which is exactly this Lorentz gauge. But could write similar terms like this, for example, for non-abelian gauge theories. And actually terms like this could have been suggested to that they could play a role for QCD. So it could be that for the quantum effective action of QCD, at low energies, there could be some generation of terms like this, where this mass will be the mass for the gluon. But for us, the most important thing is that you can write mass terms by preserving a gauge invariance, a gauge symmetry. Now we want to kind of use the same idea for gravity. So the starting point here is linearized gravity. So we linearize GR over Minkowski like this. And so we have the quadratic action for the metric fluctuations here. Here is epsilon is just the kinetic operator. So it has some tensor structure that I didn't write explicitly because it's quite cumbersome, but okay. So it's just a second order operator. And so to introduce this kind of mass for the conformal mode, yeah, there is a question, I think.
Yes, Hank.
Yeah, sorry, just to confirm, you're interpreting 1/2 box as like in the Fourier space, right? So it's like 1/2 p squared or something.
Yeah, I mean, this was the explicit example of the this running of the coupling constant. So in general, when you have an expression like 1/2 box, it means that you have to give a precise prescription for the Green function that you want to use. So the point is that when I will have the quantum effective action for my model, then all the appearances of this inverse box in the equations of motion will be taken to be those with a retarded propagator, so that in this way I can have some causality in the equations of motion. So this is the point of this this related to this remark that I did before. So mm-hmm. When you want to use causal equations of motion, you have to use retarded propagator, and this also holds for defining the right way these inverse box operators.
Right, because like I know the propagators in general distribution, right? And when you just write down the action where you have 1/2 box inside of it, you sort of like you have to make sure that the action converges as an integral, and that sort of forces you to only admit certain types of functions, basically, like for example, A's, and there's some power counting, like 2 and H of 2 and minus 2 or something like that. But anyways, like the admissible function space for both actions are different, right?
Yeah.
So like, I guess my question is like, right, you have the same equations of motion, but like, doesn't one equation of motion emit more solutions than the other one?
In this case, you mean?
Yeah.
Not really. So here, actually, there is if you give here, this is a bit of a formal manipulation, right? Because in the end, you should specify what we really mean by this. But okay, just from a formal point of view, here, if you you could. Basically, if you use Lorentz gauge, you could do some integration by parts here and get completely rid of these non-localities. So you could go back to this kind of formulation here.
Right. Okay. Yeah. So I guess the solution space will be equivalent under the assumption that you can do the gauge transformation.
Yes.
Okay. Okay. Thank you.
Okay, let's go back to the to this kind of construction that I was showing for giving a mass to the conformal mode. So I was discussing linearized gravity, and to introduce this conformal mode, what we do is to write a decomposition of this metric fluctuation. So this scalar here, this S, will be our conformal mode. I mean, proportional to the conformal mode that we defined before. And so when we do this decomposition, we know that the gauge invariant parts are the transverse stresses part and this conformal mode S. So the gauge, gauge transformation will shift these vectors here, epsilon, but will not affect this gauge invariant degrees of freedom. And of course, this is the relation in general. If you want to invert this relation, you have to use non-local operators. So if you want to write the gauge invariant degrees of freedom in terms of the full metric fluctuation, this H, then you will have to use some projector operator like this, which is a non-local operator. And after you plug this decomposition in this quadratic action and in the interaction action with matter, this is the result that you get. So from here, it's quite simple to try to give a mass to the conformal mode. So you could just add a term like this in this quadratic action. And when you write a mass term like this, then you go, you can in order to get closer to covariantization of this, we can rewrite everything back in terms of the full metric. So if you use this kind of inverse relation that I presented before, then you can write everything like this. So the mass term here will appear with some non-local terms because this P mu nu is a non-local operator. So again, to build the mass, we use non-local operators. And now we can try to write some covariant equations of motion that reduce or covariant action that reduce to this when linearized over Minkowski. So the important point is that I'm interpreting this as a quantum effective action, because here I'm using non-local operators, and we know that from a fundamental point of view, in order to be compatible with causality, fundamental actions should be local. So this non-local structure makes sense just at the level of the quantum effective action. So how do we write a covariant equation of motion or a covariant action corresponding to this? So in principle, there are a lot of covariantizations that you can write. Here I'm showing two examples that we have been using a lot in our studies in the investigations that of this project. So if you start from the quadratic action here, this quantum effective action, then a very natural covariantization is of this kind. So this mass term will become an operator like this. So we have R inverse box square root of R. And okay, this is sometimes called, we call it this RR model because of this appearance of two Ricci scalars here. So this is a possible non-local structure that you could have in this quantum effective action for gravity. Or another possibility that we have considered is to just covariantize this starting from the equations of motion. And by using these ingredients that I wrote here above on the top, a very straightforward covariantization is this, where here I introduced the transverse part of a tensor, and this will be needed to in order for this to preserve energy momentum conservation, because we know from Bianchi identities that the covariant derivative of the Einstein tensor is zero. If you want the covariant derivative of the energy momentum tensor to be zero, we should have something transverse here. So to do this, we could we can exploit these definitions of a transverse part of a tensor. So these two models are equivalent when you look at them as a linearized model of Minkowski, but as a full covariant models, they are different. And so this means that when you use them in cosmology, where you use a Friedman, Robertson, Walker background, and you can also put perturbations over these, you can expect that this will have different cosmological predictions. So we have studied a bit the cosmological predictions of this model. And I will present them in the second part, if there will be some time left. Here, I just want to say that there are a lot of tests that this model have to pass to be cosmologically viable. So here I wrote some of them. So first of all, it's already non-trivial for them to have a background evolution which admits a Friedman-Robertson-Walker solution. Then you should also study the stability of the scalar tensor perturbations, and you should perform a lot of comparison with data, so CMB data. We have considered also some data from galaxy surveys, so baryonic acoustic oscillations, luminosity distance measurements, structure formation data, and so on. And I mean, playing with this kind of possible structures, and also we have considered, a lot of other structures have been considered. We end up in the end with just one model among those that we have considered that seems to work, which is this RT. In particular, I want to mention that this RR that I presented before is excluded by some variation of the effective Newton constant, which is not possible because of lunar laser ranging, which constrains this time variation of the effective Newton constant. So from now on, I will just focus on one precise model. So this will be my model. So when I will talk about non-local gravity, I will just focus on this model here. And so if you want to study cosmology with this, so first of all, it would be good to have the equations of the some manageable form of the equations of motion. So to do this, you can kind of try of, to localize to this kind of theory. So you could write some auxiliary fields in order for this to assume a local structure. Of course, this is just a trick. I mean, this equation is non-local. So we are just introducing some fields here, this U and S, just for the this expression to be more simple so that we can do calculations with it. So an important point is exactly this, that these fields that I'm introducing are not new degrees of freedom. So this U and S in principle are just determined by the metric if you have a fundamental understanding of these equations. So to show this, let me go back from a case to a case where we have a fundamental understanding, which is the Polyakov action. So this is one of the main reasons I talked about this before. So when you have, if you remember, I presented this this non-local formulation of the Polyakov action. And in principle, you can write this, you can do the same trick that I did here. So you can write this in a local form by introducing some auxiliary field in this way. Here I put a minus just to have the same definition that I had before, but doesn't matter. And the point is that this field here that obeys an equation like this is not really a propagating degree of freedom, because the field U that you should choose is exactly this kind of form. So it's fixed by the metric. So in this case, the conformal mode of the metric. So this means that there are not really new degrees of freedom that comes from this, from the homogeneous solution of this. From a quantum point of view, this means that there are not creation or annihilation operators that you can build by promoting coefficients of this function to operators. So this is to say that these auxiliary fields are just a trick to make our computations more easy, but they are not new degrees of freedom. So when you we have some equations of motion like this, it's not that we are dealing with a scalar tensor model of gravity. So it's not that we have new degrees of freedom, so a scalar and a vector in this case, but actually we have just the same degrees of freedom as in GR. So the only degrees of freedom here are the metric, the components of the metric. And I mean, I can also be a bit more explicit on this. So let's suppose we want to count degrees of freedom. So we know that to count degrees of freedom, there are different ways. So one possible way is just use a 3+1 decomposition. So you introduce a decomposition in scalar, vector, and tensor components for all the components of your metric. From this, you can build gauge invariant variables. You can do the same kind of decomposition from the energy momentum tensor and then write equations for your gauge invariant variables. So we want to show that when you consider GR and also when you consider this kind of modified gravity models, you always have 2 degrees of freedom, 2 propagating degrees of freedom. And this is true because among these 6 gauge invariant variables, only 2 of them, which are those included in the transverse traceless part here of this tensor, obey a wave equation. So the other are just constraint equations, so are Poisson equation like this. So this is the only propagating degree of freedom. These are the only propagating degrees of freedom because there are 2 of them. And the same holds for our modified gravity models. So again, here to make it explicit that there is just the same number of degrees of freedom as in GR. So as long as you introduce a mass for the conformal mode, you're not introducing extra degrees of freedom in this kind of models. And an implication of this, I mean, another way to express the same thing is that this conformal mode S actually is an on-local function of the metric. So it means that when it appears in your equations of motion like this, it's not really a ghost, of course, because for example, this is the equation for GR, and in GR there are no ghosts. So here, this kind of structure is just a consequence of the fact that you have a degree of freedom that is expressed by, which is related to the original metric by a non-local operation. So it means that when you write an equation like this, you are not using any inverse box operator, but you will have a Poisson prescription, and so there is no problem with the ghost because this S is non-radiative. This statement is easily understood at the level of GR because in GR we know there is no ghost. But I mean, it's important to understand that it holds also for this kind of non-local models because again, we have the same number of degrees of freedom. So when counting degrees of freedom, you should use the fundamental action of the theory, not the quantum effective action. Or if you want, you should use here's the metric and not the conformal mode because the conformal mode is related to the metric by non-local operations. This was just some more comments about the possible origin of this mass for the conformal mode. So this is in a sense, a negative result for matter perturbative loop corrections. So I present a bit a simple argument for, a simplified argument for this. And the point is that when you consider perturbative loop corrections from matter fields, then it has been shown that you can generate structures like this. So in principle, one could say, maybe here in this form factor between the two Ricci scalars, there is some kind of structure that will give me these non-local models, because here you have, as in the RR model, you have R, some operator, and then another Ricci scalar. So you could hope, oh, maybe I can derive this from this kind of matter loop corrections. But the point is that even if this operator is there, it actually is not viable for cosmology. So because for cosmology, basically what you need is this mass term for the conformal mode to be of the same order, or actually a bit smaller in our model, but not very small compared to the Hubble constant today, because you want to explain dark energy with it. And if you look here at this kind of prediction from these matter loop corrections, then you can realize that in this case, the mass will be much smaller. So this means that matter loop corrections cannot give you some kind of non-local structure which is viable for cosmology. So this is not the answer we are looking for. So our main candidate for this mass for the conformal mode is some dynamical mass generation. So it's not a perturbative loop correction. I don't know how much time I still have.
Say 5 to 10 minutes.
Yeah, I can give you now maybe a 5 minutes overview of really cosmological predictions and how you can test this model. I will skip a lot of details, but I will just mention the most important thing. So you can study the background cosmology for this model. You can study various scenarios for this, because the point is that from a fundamental point of view, if you had a fundamental derivation, then you could relate the auxiliary fields to the metric. So just like for the Polyakov action, It's here. The auxiliary field is just determined by the conformal mode. But in our case, we don't have a fundamental derivation for our action. So it means that we should deal with some initial conditions problem for these auxiliary fields. And it turns out that there is just one extra parameter with respect to lambda CDM. So in lambda CDM, we have the cosmological constant. Here you have the mass of the conformal mode and the extra parameter of these initial conditions, because of our ignorance of a fundamental derivation of this model. And this parameter here basically can be related to the moment where initial conditions are chosen. So if you start your model during inflation, then depending on the number of foldings that you have in inflation from the moment where this field has initial conditions of order one to the end of inflation, you can have different predictions that affect late time cosmology. So in practice, we are not really leaving this parameter to be free. We're just choosing a bunch of values that are meaningful for different scales or mass scales of inflation, and we are studying predictions of our model in different cases. So when you see here, more curves are just, they just correspond to different initial conditions associated to this parameter here. And this is the result that we obtained for our model after fitting it to data. And so as you can see, there is a non-trivial dynamics of dark energy. So this is the dark energy equation of state as a function of redshift. So it's not, of course, it's not a constant minus one as in lambda CDM. There is some dynamics here. And there are some deviations here at Z of order one. We can say there are some 5% deviations or smaller, depending on the assumption on these initial conditions. And today we can say there are order 5% conditions as well, 5% deviations. In the same way, you can study you can study different parameterization for this and the prediction that this model gives for this, for example, for the W0, WA parameterization and so on. So to summarize all of this, let me just say that when you study background scalar perturbations, the deviations are usually small. So there are percent, for example, we have seen 5% deviations in the case of the energy question of state, but they are actually smaller, for example, for the Hubble parameter today. And in scalar perturbations, they can be even smaller, so sub-percent level. So it could seem that this model is not really testable, but there is a surprise for this, which is in tensor perturbations, because when you study tensor perturbations of this model, you found the large deviations with respect to lambda CDM. So with respect to what you expect from the standard cosmological model. And this can be tested with gravitational waves. Okay, here I'm skipping a bit the details, but basically when you have a theory of modified gravity and you want to study the propagation of gravitational waves across cosmological distances, then what you really access by detecting a coalescence of compact binaries is a luminosity distance which is different from the electromagnetic one. So it means that in modified gravity model, there is a specific notion of gravitational wave luminosity distance. And basically we computed this gravitational wave luminosity distance in this specific model. And there are deviations that can be even of order 80% respect to the standard electromagnetic one. So this means that with a bunch of events, of gravitational wave event, we could be able to test this. Okay, actually today we will need a few years to do this test, but in the future with the LIS or the Einstein telescope, we could, we could just use one single event to prove or disprove this kind of assumptions. So these are, this is the last message of my talk. I think that probably for most of you, the most important thing could be just that there is some model that actually, that today passes all tests. So this could stimulate a bit some kind of research for a more fundamental understanding of this mass for the conformal mode. Thank you for your attention.
Thanks, Anis, for this very interesting talk.
Thank you.
Are there questions from students first? So no students' question at the moment. Are there questions for anyone else? So, okay, I see raised hand by Benjamin.
Yes, thank you for this really nice talk. So I was wondering with regards to this RR model. So I assume that you only looked at this particular term and not more local ones, like if you would add a local R squared term or different higher order non-local terms. Or did you look at it? Or if not,
yeah, I mean, we have me and other people in the Geneva group. We have also studied other kind of structures. So, but this seems to be the only one that passes all tests. So, for example, you could consider a structure with, like, you could put here R mu nu. This is something that we have tested, and also we tested some different form for this. Form factors here. So, for example, we tested what happens if you, instead of 1/box squared, you put like 1/ this delta 4 operator, which is an operator that appears in the conformal anomaly in 4 dimensions. And similarly, we looked also at modifications of this RT model. What happens if instead of structures like these that involve G mu nu, here you involve the Ricci tensor instead of G mu nu, so structures that involve R mu nu. But I mean, all of these do not seem to work for different reasons. So in some cases, you don't even reproduce the background. In some cases, you have unstable scalar perturbations or unstable tensors and so on.
I see. And what about cubic terms in the curvature?
These, I don't think, I mean, personally, I didn't test for them. I don't think that that other people in the group, they tested it.
I see. Thank you.
Okay.
More questions? Okay, so let me also ask something. So you essentially say that to derive or to motivate these two models, you, for the RR model, you start from the axon. For the RT model, you started from effective field equations. But so are you, do you know, from which effective axon this type of field equation, the RT type, can arise?
That's a good question. That was actually my first project as a PhD student. And we didn't manage to find an effective action that gives this equation of motion. And so the point is that this kind of transverse path operation is really complicated to be done. I mean, there is no closed formula in curved spacetime for this. So in flat spacetime, you could in principle invert this by using some, applying a bunch of derivatives and manipulating them a bit. You could manage to write this transverse path in terms of the original tensor. But if you try to do it in curved spacetime, then this really becomes difficult because, covariant derivatives do not commute, and you will have a very easily appearance of curvature terms that you cannot invert anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So the short answer is no, we don't know what is the... we don't even know if there exists an action corresponding to this.
Yeah, this would be something interesting, at least in principle, if one could find an effective action compatible with that. So I have another question, but so I would first give the word to Kasia.
Yeah.
Hi. Actually, I want to follow up on the previous question. So when you say you don't know if there is any effective action that gives these equations of motion, what do you mean? You mean that it's something that should work, but you don't know how to derive it, or like
Yeah, I mean, but the point is that even if it works, maybe there is some kind of modification of this, right?
Yeah.
It works as well in the sense that gives small deviations in the cosmological predictions, because by working, I mean if it works for cosmology. And then maybe in this kind of modification, you could have an action. So what I'm saying is that there is no action that I know for this precise form of the equations of motion.
I see, because my picture was that you start with the usual gravity action, and then you use some effective theory method to derive the effective action, and then you get those field equations, but apparently that's not the case. So you guess these equations, and then you conjecture that, yeah, so there may or may not be the action. Is that right?
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay. So just to double check, so you're working in Lorentzian signature, is that right?
The signature of the metric, you mean?
Yes.
In minus and for the time part and plus for the other part.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. No, that's okay. That's an interesting question, actually. So yeah, there's not much. Well, are people thinking about it? Like trying to look for a sort of fundamental reason for these equations, trying to find the action, or do you think it's hopeless?
To find an action corresponding to this, you mean?
Yes.
No, as far as I know, I mean, this was only my project at the beginning, but then we abandoned it because, I mean, I tried a bit to work on this, but even simplifying a lot the problem, it seemed impossible to find a formula for this. So currently, I don't think there are people working on this. But I mean, as I said, it's probably not really worth focusing on just this. I mean, because it's much likely that in the infrared, the real quantum effective action is something different, and maybe. I mean, maybe the difference with respect to these are small.
Oh, yes. Okay.
But, I mean, when you combine with these, maybe it's more simple to find a corresponding action.
Okay. Yeah. So, thank you.
I hope this makes sense.
Yes. Thank you.
So commenting on what you just said, I think still it is important to have an effective action that gives this field equation or field equations that do not differ too much from this, because otherwise kind of the motivation to study this this model becomes weaker, because your point is once you resemble all quantum fluctuations, you will have an effective action that is probably this possibly as some non-local term that are also important at large scales, and therefore we want to study the phenomenology of this non-locality. But if there isn't a corresponding effective action that reproduces this effective equation of motion or field equations, how would you justify the non-locality?
Yeah, I agree with you on that. I mean, for people really looking at the fundamental understanding of this, so people like you working in quantum gravity, it will be much more attractive to have something with an action that works. Because the fundamental point of view is using a quantum effective action, as I said. So it will be much simpler, right? But it will be something meaningful to find some conclusive evidence for the conformal for the mass of the conformal mode. So I mean, mass of the conformal mode is something more general than this. For example, also the RR model gives a mass to the conformal mode. So it will be it will already be great to have some justification for this more general statement instead of focusing on the Praise X form of the quantum effective action. This will be a starting point. And
so there is a
done yet.
I perfectly understand that it is difficult. I was just asking because it is an interesting question. So there is a comment by Emil.
I just want to say that it's an interesting talk, thank you. But we did study the quantum effect of action coming from the trace anomaly, even in four dimensions. And there are non-local terms, which are important in the infrared, and it could even generate scalar gravitational waves. It's different from what you did in the sense that there is no mass, so we didn't put in by hand for the conformal mode. But there truly is a propagating scalar mode, unlike what you are saying about constraining it so that you have back to transverse traceless modes. So just to answer in general terms, you know, there is some work in this direction. I think it's not yet complete or conclusive, but there are indications that the quantum effects can generate these kinds of terms from the conformal anomaly.
Okay.
Yeah. I've seen a bit this kind of maybe you were referring to, I don't know if you can still see my screen here.
Yes, I can.
So maybe you're referring to something like this, right? So this is the possible covariantization of the conformal anomaly in four dimensions.
Well, it's different than this because there's no M squared term. And instead of the Ricci scalar, you'll have objects
Euler
Gauss-Bonnet.
Probably you cannot see you can just see the presentation, sorry. Yes. Just one moment, because I was referring to a PDF now.
You have to share your screen.
Yes. So let me do like this. And okay, now I'm sharing this PDF. So in my last statement, I was referring to this expression. Oh, so is this something they think that you're referring to?
Yes, yeah. that's the kind of action we study. Yes.
Yeah, exactly. Absolutely. And actually, here you see there is this Panis operator here, and I mean this was also for us a motivation to write some mass term which involves this operator here, but it didn't work for cosmology. But I mean, as far as I understand, you are saying something different. You're saying
I'm saying there's no mass term there, but you can write a local form of that non-local action, and it does. And you can study its propagating degrees of freedom, and it does give a scalar degree of freedom in addition to the Einstein terms. But we can discuss after if you like.
I see. And this is propagating, you see. You're
saying. Yes, propagating. Yes, propagating.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I don't know what kind of constraints there are now about this, because some time ago, there was some constraints about vector modes propagating. I mean, from detection of gravitational waves, you can give also some constraints, some bounds on the non-propagating vector degrees of freedom. I don't know if there is something.
Yeah, I mean, there's no bound coming yet because these modes are so weakly coupled to sources because they evolve these higher curvature terms that you wouldn't be able to detect it in any experiment yet, but perhaps in cosmology.
I see. Oh, that's interesting because this means that they are still viable, right?
I think it's still viable, yeah.
Nice. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, so I think I saw a raised hand by Hank. I don't know.
Yeah, I wanted to ask about, like, what if you studied the quantum effect of action around, like, for example, in 4D, you use the diffeomorphism anomaly, like the Euler terms.
Actually, I don't know about this. So can you be more specific about what you mean by this diffeomorphism anomaly?
I think it's SL4 or I think it's the anomaly that arises from the energy momentum tensor not being symmetric, I believe, or at least the expectation value of it, and that's generated by the SL4 infinitesimal rotation. And like, this manifests in the quantum theory as the tough anomaly that's given by just the Euler density, or integration over the Euler density, I should say. So I think that's a topological vacuum, or at least you can expand your quantum effect of action around a vacuum that is in different topological sectors, I should say, right? And I don't know, maybe like because the maybe there's some sort of like instantons that you would see when you solve these non-local equations of motion or something, but I'm not sure.
Okay, and I mean as someone looked into the integration of this anomaly you're talking about, I mean, is there some work already done on this? I mean, on the integration of this anomaly to get a quantum effective action or?
That I'm not sure, but there have been work that studies these anomalies that arises from non-conservation of energy momentum tensor, and also like mixed ones where you have SU2 or U1 like gauge anomalies that are mixed with the Poincaré symmetry. That's a paper by, let me pull it up, by Clay Cordova and Intrilligator.
Okay, maybe if you can write it in the chat, maybe I can
sure, yeah. For it later. But yeah, the article mainly talks about like classification up to cohomology, the descent equation for these tough anomalies, but they don't do I shouldn't say that because I haven't read the entire article, but the dynamics around these topological vacua are more subtle, I would say. And I think would be interesting to study.
I see. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you for the interesting talk.
More questions? So I would still have maybe one, two questions. Going back to the actions, effective actions of the RR type. Okay. So you said, this is essentially an action where you have the R squared term that includes a form factor of the form 1/box squared. But you say that this is essentially already excluded by observations. But how about the different type of 1/box to n operators? So did you also study this other type of
No, we didn't study this because I mean, here if you put different powers of blocks, of course you would need different powers of mass here, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And I mean, since our strongest motivation for this was, I mean, to give a mass to the conformal mode. I mean, these in the mm-hmm. when you linearize this, this will not reduce to something like this.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean.
Yes, I was just wondering if I mean.
No, we didn't look for that.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And so one more question. It is more on the technical side. So you say that to solve the field equations. Since obviously, I mean, they are arbitrarily complicated, you introduce these auxiliary fields.
Yeah.
And then the non-locality essentially is hidden in these auxiliary fields.
Yeah.
So do you actually solve these the whole set of coupled equations for the auxiliary field and for the metric?
Yeah, when, that's what we do for cosmology, yes. Of course, mm-hmm. This means that... I mean, you do it first at the background level and you solve them numerically,
mm-hmm.
and then you solve them for linear perturbations. So that's what we did. Mm-hmm. But in any case, it's a numerical solution. Yeah.
Yes, I mean.
Yeah.
The important thing is that you really study the whole set.
Yes. Because I mean, if you don't do that, then you can. You can't get any information on dark energy, right? Because
yes, of course. I think I was confused by a sentence that you had later in the presentation. That you were essentially starting from exactly. Auxiliary fields condition for the auxiliary fields, but you are actually solving the questions. Okay, good. Thanks. So, are there more questions or comments? Okay, this doesn't seem to be the case. So I would like to thank you, Anis, again for this very interesting talk and discussion. So I would now try to unmute everyone to clap their hands.
Thank you. And thank you, Alessia, for the invitation again. And thank you, everyone, for your questions and your